Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined this week by Jeff Timmer, the partner of Two Rivers Public Affairs Strategy. And a little later in the program, we're going to be talking with Jake Davison. He is one candidate who is running against Todd Corser in the 82nd State House District next year. He's the first. There could be others. We're going to keep an eye on that, and Jake's going to talk about his thinking announcing more than a year before that primary. But first, Jeff, we're taking a look at the big MERS board here of all the presidential Republican candidates. We're just a couple days away from the Fox News debate. For public disclosure, I have heard on the street that you are working for Governor John Kasich in Ohio. I know you can't really talk about that, but can you give our listeners a taste of maybe who you may be supporting in this whole affair?
Sure. Well, the Kasich campaign will be making announcements about the state of the campaign in Michigan as time goes on here. It was just announced yesterday that the Governor Kasich will be attending the Republican Mackinac Island Conference in September. It's safe to say that I plan to support Governor Kasich in his candidacy for the Republican nomination.
So we just have that disclosure going into the field, but you've been in politics on the Republican side for many years, former executive director for the Michigan Republican Party, so you know a little bit about this, you know a little bit about debates. I think we talked the last time we had a debate at Oakland University during the whole Rick Perry affair, so you know a little bit about what happens at these things. Tell our listeners, share some of your observations on what you think is the most important thing that could come out of this debate on Wednesday.
I guess what people remember most about debates and instances from debates are the things that go wrong. It's what do people remember about the Michigan debate in the 2012 cycle, and that's where Rick Perry's campaign came completely off the rails. You could argue whether or not it was on the rails at that point in any regard, but that's where he famously forgot the three departments he was going to make the centerpiece of his three-department
elimination plan.
Yeah. And so there's those moments, those gaffes that tend to stick out more. And so a debate oftentimes comes down, if you're not the one that steps on your tongue, you've done okay. I think we're going to see a field of 10 very qualified candidates. The Republican field is very deep. I think that you're going to see Governor Kasich on that stage. He's surging in the polls. The timing of his announcement has been very effective, and the latest speculation is that he will be among the top 10 on the stage in Cleveland, his home state. I think is he's a very interesting candidate among the 10. Governor Kasich is a candidate who delivers the complete resume of somebody who is ready to be president, in a solid, established conservative. When he stands up there and talks about, he doesn't run away from his record, his 18 years in Washington, the way some people run away from their record in Congress. He's a guy who can stand and look the American people in the eye and say, "You can trust me to balance the federal budget." Why? Because I've actually done it. He was the architect of the 1998 balanced budget that led to the largest surplus in U.S. history. We actually started to pay off the national debt under leadership of John Kasich in the House at that time. He's a guy who served nearly 20 years on the Armed Services Committee. We have a very dangerous world out there. We have radical Islam and ISIS. We have the Soviet military renaissance going on in Russia and in Ukraine and threats in Eastern Europe. And this is a guy who sat on the Armed Services Committee during the Reagan years, during the defeat of the Soviet Union in the Cold War. He's a guy who discovered the $1,000 hammers and toilet seats at the Pentagon and helped lead the reform of the Pentagon, making sure that we have the money for our military, not for wasted things in the defense budget. So this is a guy who's ready to lead in Washington. He's got experience in the private sector, and he's been the governor now elected to a second term of a big, important state of Ohio.
And he's surging, it seems like, right now. Yeah. Third in the polls in New Hampshire right now.
Third in the polls in New Hampshire, in the top 10 nationally. And you look at his conservative record in Ohio, where he inherited an $8 billion budget deficit. He'd been out of office, hadn't held elective office for 10 years, had been working in the private sector, had a show on Fox News, used to sit in as a guest host for Bill O'Reilly, worked in investment banking and served on boards, taught at universities. Ohio was in trouble. He $8 billion deficit. He ran, defeated a Democrat incumbent in 2010, led the state of Ohio, which was very similar to the circumstances we faced here in Michigan and that Rick Snyder inherited. Ohio quickly had, under Kasich's leadership, a $2 billion surplus. He cut taxes by $3 billion. They've created more than 350,000 jobs in Ohio. So we're seeing what's some of the results that we've seen under Snyder's leadership here in Michigan. John Kasich has led Ohio to those same kind of results. And no Republican has ever won the White House without winning Ohio. And John Kasich is well positioned to do that. Here's a state where you have a very purple state that can go either way in elections. And John Kasich won re-election by a 31-point margin.
How important is that he's not the undercard debate?
It's important, but it's not the end all of the campaign. If regardless of where that bar ends up, who's on that stage, there's going to be ample opportunity over these next many months for candidates with the record and with the resources to take their campaign directly to the voters. And Governor Kasich has been doing that in New Hampshire. It is evident in the surge that you see there in the polls. After his announcement tour, he announced it in Ohio, went to New Hampshire, South Carolina, Iowa, and then Michigan. That's an evidence of where Michigan is going to play. We're a relatively early nominating state with a March 8 primary. I think you're going to see Governor Kasich back here in Michigan many times between now and March 8.
Now, this coming debate, is it safe to assume that most people's attention is going to be on what outrageous thing comes out of Donald Trump's mouth?
Well, that seems to be where a lot of the attention is right now. But, somebody was describing to me recently that Republican skepticism about Trump's ability to win the primary might be like the Democrats' skepticism about Jeffrey Figer winning their primary for governor in 1998, that it could never happen until it did. The difference being, and I think in this case, is that Jeffrey Figer could win that primary with a plurality of votes. I guess I would be very doubtful that Donald Trump can amass a majority of delegates. But, that means I'll let somebody from the Trump campaign talk about Donald Trump.
All right. And then as far as some of these other candidates here, I would say maybe the top tier of a Jeb Bush or a Marco Rubio, the key has got to be not to stand out and make a outrageous blunder, right?
Certainly. But that's kind of playing a prevent defense. You want to get out there, use the, if there's 10 candidates on stage and what's probably, I don't know if it's a 90-minute debate or a 2-hour.
I think it is two hours.
Okay, so 2 whole hours. Still, divide that by 10. You don't have a lot of time with your microphone live. And so you've got a very small amount of time to make the case to the American people. There will be more debates, but each opportunity you want to put your best foot forward, make the case for why you as a candidate, your record, your leadership capabilities are what America needs at this point in time.
Now, obviously, you've got a partiality to Kasich, but looking at the rest of the field, which one of these other candidates out of the 17 we have listed here has kind of surprised you in a good way, and who has surprised you as far as their candidacy in a bad way? Let's start with a bad way. Who's underperforming right now?
There were a couple articles this week in some of the Washington publications. I believe Politico had an article titled "The Death Spiral of the Rand Paul Campaign."
Yeah, I read that.
Now, I don't know that, I'm not proclaiming that, but that's how it is being reported and viewed by a lot of folks, a campaign. A candidate that was a year ago called the most interesting man in politics is struggling to get any attention whatsoever in a campaign to get traction in the polls, to get traction in fundraising, and a lot of people have to be reminded at this point that he's running. That's an interesting development from where this race was a year ago, where it was expected to be. There's still plenty of time. I'm not saying that count anybody out at this point, but Donald Trump seems to have, with his anti-Washington, anti-politician rhetoric, seems to have sucked some of the oxygen out of, or at least temporarily, out of the campaigns of Rand Paul and perhaps Ted Cruz, who also had position themselves in that vein.
Who do you think has overperformed then? Donald Trump, is he kind of the big surprise right now?
Yeah, before Trump announced his candidacy, there were polls out that showed that two-thirds of Republicans would never support Donald Trump. They said, no, he's the one candidate I'd never support. Maybe that's bearing out because he has yet to surge past 33% in polls. Two-thirds of the people may well, you know, still hold solid to the fact that they won't vote for him. Yeah. It remains to be seen, but I think the summer of Trump, as it's been called on some of these shows lately, has been a surprise. He's certainly been an interesting development in the campaign that I don't think people had expected a few months ago.
You know, and then we should also probably talk about how timing is so important in these political campaigns. Looking at a Rick Santorum or a Rick Perry, I mean, these are people, or Chris Christie, whose star was... probably their peak on their star is probably long past.
Sure, you look at a candidate like Santorum, who 4 years ago won the Iowa caucuses, made a serious run at toppling Mitt Romney, and now doesn't register above 1% on national polls and is nowhere to be seen in the polls in Iowa. You get a guy like Chris Christie, who was riding high 4 years ago, and he's had his series of in-state issues over the last couple of years. But people could make the case that had he ran 4 years ago, he would have had a much better shot at the nomination than he appears to from this vantage point as we, you know, end July the year before. Same with Rick Perry. Had he not run in 2012, he would be viewed right now, I think, as a governor of a major state for several terms, with the record he had in Texas, would be viewed as a serious candidate with his fundraising ability, where now he's struggling to get credibility, to be taken with seriousness. And he's tried to kind of move beyond the late night joke candidacy by being the one to go out and most, I think, forcefully go after Donald Trump, but that hasn't seemed to help him at all.
And then George Pataki, shoot, maybe if he'd run 12 years ago? I mean...
Yeah. I forget when he left office in New York, but he's a Republican who governed a blue state, a very blue state, for three terms. Was governor during 9/11, and now is an asterisk on this race. I think that people would be hard-pressed to remember George Pataki, and Pataki fever certainly hasn't caught, you know, going around in this campaign.
Well, if you look at our... chart on the other side here at the MERS board, we have bets on who we think are going to be the first to drop, and I think the person who has the most votes right now is Pataki.
It's hard to say. A candidate like Pataki or Jim Gilmore, the former governor of Virginia who just announced this week, these guys will stay in the race so long as they have the funds to get from place to place. They're running for their own reasons, and until the gas money dries up, they'll be in the race.
Very good. Jeff Timmer from Two Rivers Public Affairs, thanks for joining us on the podcast this week.
Thank you, Kyle.
All right, joining us now is Jake Davison, a candidate for the State House in the Todd Corser, Lapeer County seat. Jake, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks, Kyle, but you don't need to refer to it as the Todd Corser seat. It's the people of Lapeer's seat, and they can send whoever they want.
That is very true. It's District 82, right? Well, why don't we just call it the 82nd District?
Because no one knows what their district number is, so I always avoid using the district number.
So you just call it the seat for the people of Lapeer County?
Yes.
This is a little different because now you're on the other end of this. You've done a podcast before.
Yeah, this is the first time I've been a guest on a podcast. Well, I've done radio interviews around the state before, and I've been on Off the Record and things. The podcast that we did was a little bit more irreverent than the serious, serious journalism that the MERS Monday
Serious, serious journalism. Don't give us a big head here. All right, so talk about this decision to run in the 82nd District. Todd Corser is the current incumbent. Why did you decide to move back to Lapeer and get into this?
Well, I had decided to move back to Lapeer prior to deciding that I should run against Todd Corser. My business, being a political consultant, is mostly phone, email. I only really have to be in Lansing once every week or so. So I moved to Lapeer for a number of reasons. I got a really good deal on rent. And I was thinking of running for another office in Lapeer, other than state representative. But with the performance of our state representative, I thought that he deserved a challenge, so I decided to go for that.
Well, what do you mean by the performance of the current state representative? What's Todd Corser doing that in his 6 months that has alarmed you?
Well, he has quit the Republican caucus. Basically, the quarterback wasn't throwing him the ball in every play, so he decided to take his ball and go home. He quit the conservative Republican team. Is it as conservative as it should be on all the issues? No. But I don't understand how quitting the caucus makes it more conservative. I don't think he can get very much done for Lapeer County. He all he knows how to do is make enemies. For instance, we have a situation in Lapeer County where the DEQ is stopping a business from expanding over a so-called wetland, which is really just some puddle that'll dry up after a couple of days. And that's the kind of thing that I don't think Todd Corser can be very effective with, because if you make enemies of the speaker and the governor and of everyone all around, how can you go to people and say, look, I need your help with this DEQ issue that we're having? I mean, and one thing that I said in MERS was that this is not a moderate versus a conservative race. This is a conservative who can't get anything done and doesn't know how to get anything done versus a conservative who knows how to get things done.
Well, now you could argue, though, that Todd Corser is standing for principle here, that he's pushing back against the Republican establishment that is not doing right by the people.
No, he's not. He's not pushing back. He's doing a lot of talking, which is not effectively pushed back. Like, let me take one issue. One of the many issues that Todd and I technically agree on is having a free market in electricity. Right now, there's two companies that have basically a de facto
monopoly.
On the industry, and even though Republicans are in charge of both houses of the governorship, there's thoughts of getting rid of what little choice there is. Well, you push back on that by fighting against it, by rallying allies, by being effective in your job, not by just sending 3,000-word emails that don't affect anything. And when you insist on alienating everyone who disagrees with you 5% of the time, how are you going to work with them later on the things that you do agree on?
So you just basically think that he is not effective and is not representing the citizens or the residents of Lapeer County.
Well, you don't have to take it from me. You can. There was an editorial 2 days ago in the Lapeer County Press, which is the main newspaper for the county, that said that he's showing up at a county commission meeting and offering to represent the people is actually kind of a shock because they'd never seen him in the district before. So you don't have to take my word for it.
So how do you think a person who has not held an elected office before is going to be able to knock off Todd Corser, who survived a pretty competitive primary last year?
Well, there was a four-way primary last year, and he got 37% of the vote. And ironically, my old employer, Americans for Prosperity, helped him with that, sending many mailings into the district. I don't think his competition was as tough as it could have been, and also it was split up. And he had run twice before, once for the House in 08 and once for the State Senate in 2010, I believe.
Yep.
And I'm sure he's a nice guy, but he's obviously, you know, in the 6 months he's had, 7 months he's had the job, he's obviously failed, and it's time for somebody else.
Now, have you met with Todd Corser before?
No. I shook his hand on the street in Lansing one time when we passed by, but we don't really know each other.
Okay. Now, you have roots in Lapeer County. That's where you grew up.
Well, I got more than that. That's where I was born and raised, and I graduated from high school there. Then I went to Michigan State because, unfortunately, Lapeer did not have a four-year university, so I did, in fact, have to leave Lapeer County. I moved an entire hour away. In the middle of going to college, I moved back to Lapeer for 8 or 9 months and ran for county commissioner, and I lost that primary by 20 votes, probably because, I'm 35 now. People sometimes think that I'm 25. So you can imagine when I was 20 years old running for county commissioner, I probably looked like I was 3 years old. So I darn near won that back then. I've never been more than an hour away. Never has 2 months passed without me being in Lapeer. That's where all my family's from. And I've been living there now the last 5-6 months. So,
what kind of reception have you gotten so far? You've been in the race about a week, but I know that you've been laying the groundwork for this for a little bit of time. What kind of reception are you getting?
It's been very good, and I don't want to pat myself on the back too much because a lot of it, I have not yet proven what I can do. But a lot of it is just bad feelings about Todd Courser. I haven't done a poll, and all I have is anecdotes, but I've got 20 of them. And of the 20 anecdotes, it's 20 to nothing against Todd Courser. People say, please put a sign in my yard. Now, some people don't know who Todd Courser is, but when they do know who he is and they know anything about him, they begin to support me.
Wow. And you already have signs that you can put in their yard?
Oh, I'm not going to put up any signs until March would be the earliest.
Yeah, sure.
I certainly have a logo ready to go.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. So this is going to be a little bit of a leap for you. You ran for county commission before. Here in Ingham County, you also ran for a countywide position, right?
Yeah, I decided at the time I wasn't thinking of running for office back in Lapeer County, so I did a favor for my local county party chairman and ran as the sacrificial lamb candidate for Ingham County treasurer. Raised about $10, spent about $10. Never had a chance, but that wasn't something that I was particularly serious about. I just wanted to, you know, do a favor for my county party, and that was fun, but that's nothing compared to this race.
So how would you describe your political philosophy? Are you a conservative? Would you consider yourself more on the libertarian spectrum? Where do you put yourself?
I'm a very, you know, hardcore conservative. I'd like to call myself a libertarian, but I'm not sure what that means anymore. It's sort of like the word Tea Party. When I was at AFP, we put on one of the first Tax Day Tea Party rallies at the Capitol. We had over 6,000 or 7,000 people. That was my third month on the job.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I was running around and helping organize that. And at that time, I felt like I was definitely Tea Party, although I think it's almost become a pejorative, unfortunately. I think some of the more quotable elements in the Tea Party movement have kind of branded it into something that it originally was not. But I consider myself to be a Tea Party Republican.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do.
Now, have you ever attended Tea Party, or are you just talking about your views?
I've been to the Lapeer County Tea Party meeting, which frankly gets about 10 times the attendance of a Lapeer County Republican Party meeting.
Really?
Yeah. There's a good 70 people at those meetings, whereas there's a good 10 people at the county party meeting, because that's where the real energy's at.
Okay. As far as social issues, where are you at on those?
100% right to life. I disagree with the court decision about saying that gay marriage is protected by the Constitution. I don't think the Constitution says anything about marriage one way or the other. Maybe it should. Maybe there should be a constitutional amendment. I am perfectly okay with gay marriage, though. I don't think, especially as a conservative, it seems that all they want to do is settle down, buy a house, and maybe adopt some kids that other folks don't want. I don't think it's a conservative position to say that the state or federal government should come into their lives and try to stop them from doing that.
So it sounds like that could be a difference between you and Courser.
That's certainly a difference, and I expect him to use that against me. But I think, you know, with the Supreme Court decision, with people's attitudes changing, and the fact that there's just so much more important things facing Lapeer County that he's not dealing with, I don't think it'll be that big of a deal.
Legalize marijuana, yes or no?
I'm for legalizing it because as a conservative, I am concerned about what drugs do to our community. I'm talking about cocaine, crack, meth, heroin. These are terrible things. Marijuana, quite frankly, is, to my mind, a less powerful drug than beer. There's no reason why we should drink beer. It doesn't have any nutritional value, but we regulate it. You got to be 21. There's taxes on it. You can't buy it after 2 o'clock in the morning and whatnot. And I think marijuana should be regulated similarly. And then it would not be a gateway drug to these other drugs that are really destructive, because you would be dealing with it legally. You wouldn't be dealing with it someone who deals marijuana and then also deals these other things.
Right. All right. Well, very good. Obviously, that'll be an issue that comes up, and obviously we'll talk more with you as we head forward in the campaign. Jake Davison from the 82nd House District.
The 82nd House District, Lapeer County.
And that's how we'll define it. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Jake Davison and Jeff Timmer for stopping by and saying hi. And I'm trying to solve a mystery here in MERS World Headquarters. I came into the office and opened up the fridge, and there was a six-pack of Oberon waiting for us. It's a little early in the week, I think, for that. Upon some investigation, Jacob, I think we've traced this to you.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was a special gift from Craig. Apparently, accidentally breaking into his house when he was on vacation gave me an award.
So. Oh, wow. That's pretty awesome. I should have done that, too.
Yeah, my advice to anyone out there listening is to not let Jacob watch your house while you're gone on vacation. He thought it was so important that I get a Jehovah's Witness letter that was left at my door that he broke into my house, setting off my alarm, and making many phone calls to me from my alarm company.
My only counterpoint is I was given a key, so it was to be expected I might go into the house at some point. So when the alarm went off and I didn't know how to fix it, I don't know what I can do about that.
So you didn't give him the code?
No, I didn't give him the code.
Well, you gave him a key, but not the code.
Yeah, he didn't need to go in there, I didn't feel.
But I had the key, so first I could go in.
In case the alarm was set off, you needed the key to get in.
Oh, that wasn't on my instructions.
Okay.
Well, you gave him a six-pack for this debacle.
And a Frisbee. The Frisbee is more important than the six-pack.
Well, the Frisbee wasn't in the fridge.
Where did the Frisbee go?
It's in my bag.
I want to know why Jacob is flaunting the six pack while he hides the frisbee.
Yeah, question.
I don't know how to respond to that.
Are we playing frisbee later today?
I would be in
after we drink the six pack.
That sounds like a great idea.
Join us in the MERS parking lot.
Best Monday ever.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Come knocking on the door and we'll see what we can do. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.